minute. So I call the Health and Social Services Committee to order at 3:04 p.m. on Thursday, February 1st, 2004. Welcome back. We're meeting today in Davis Room 106 of the Capitol Building. Please silence your cell phones out of courtesies to others attending. And with us today, we have Representative Sadler, Representative Sumner, Representative Fields, Representative Mina, and myself, Chair Prox. I also want to introduce my committee aide, Riley Nye. Please pass any notes or correspondence with the committee through Mr. Nye. And also our health records recorder, House records recorder. There we go. Today is Cheryl Cole and Zach Lawhorn, our teleconference moderator. Today we have two items on the agenda. The first is the initial hearing of House Bill 242 to extend senior benefits payment program sponsored by Representative Vance. And the other is the initial hearing of House Bill 260, catastrophic illness and medical assistance. On to 242, Representative Vance and her staff are here to explain why they have brought this bill before us. And Deb Etheridge, the Director of the Division of Public Assistance, is available to answer questions. Yes. So, Representative Vance, please put yourself on the record and let us know whether you prefer to take questions in the course of your presentation or hold our questions until you have finished your presentation. And introduce your staff member for us, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's good to be back before the committee today. This is Representative Sarah Vance of House District 6, proudly representing the Lower Kenai Peninsula. I don't believe that we will need to take questions in the middle of my presentation because it will probably be the quickest one that you have had today.
All right.
You care to introduce yourself?
Bob Allinger, just staffer for Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 242 is simply to extend the sunset date on the senior benefits payment program by 10 years. House Bill 242 stands as a testament to Alaska's enduring commitment to its senior population, especially crucial as the cost of living rises. Proposed to extend the Alaska Senior Benefits Payment Program until June of 2034, this bill reflects the state's longstanding history of supporting seniors dating back to 1915. Initiating the age-old bonus program in 1915, Alaska recognized the contributions of its elderly residents by providing a monthly payment of $12.50 to those who lived in the territory for a decade. This early initiative laid the groundwork for future programs and acknowledging the pioneers who significantly contributed to the building of the state. Amidst burgeoning oil wealth in 1972, Alaska introduced the Longevity Bonus Program, starting with a $100 monthly payment for seniors residing in the state for at least 25 years. Evolving over the years, the program adapted to changing needs, transitioning to a needs-based approach in 2003 as the Senior Assistance Program and further evolving into the Senior Care Program in 2004. Despite budget challenges and caseload increases, the Alaska Senior Benefits Payment Program emerged in 2007, demonstrating resilience by adapting to ensure financial assistance reaches seniors in need. With income-based eligibility tied to the federal poverty guidelines for Alaska, the program addresses the rising costs faced by seniors on fixed incomes. Alaska's commitment to its senior population has taken various forms over the years, evolving to meet changing needs. House Bill 242 seeks to continue this legacy, acknowledging the vital role seniors have played in building and shaping Alaska. As the cost of living increases, sustaining this program becomes crucial, reaffirming the state's dedication to assisting those who have significantly contributed to Alaska's rich history. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your consideration and for the opportunity to present this bill today.
Thank you, Representative Vance. I have to announce Representative McCormick joined us at 3:08. And we have questions from the committee. Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, if we extend the date by 10 years, will the payment amounts increase corresponding to inflation, or would we need to amend the bill to ensure that the payment amounts keep pace with inflation? Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Fields, thank you for that question. It is already a part of the payment program that the cost will increase with inflation accounted for. So I don't believe we would have to make any changes.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions from committee members? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had some experience with the program and the budgetary impact of it. So I guess I'd like to offer the sponsor the opportunity to opine as to the net benefits to the state. I know that a lot of retirees have spendable income. They have pensions. They have benefits. This is taking $26 million. Are we getting what's the net result to the state of Alaska? You don't have to defend the entire program, but we are extending it, so you get to.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I do appreciate that question because as a fiscal conservative, every dollar counts. Mm-hmm. With a rising cost of food, medical services, this is specifically going to low-income seniors. These are not the seniors who are building secondary homes. And this is supporting those who are the elders that need an extra hand. So in the packet is the level of payments depending on income that is provided just that extra little bit that can mean buying food or medicine for these low income. My district specifically is greatly impacted by this because according to the University of Alaska data, my district is one of the top who relies on Social Security income, and also a third of my district are seniors. And back in 2019, when this payment program was set to be eliminated, there was a consistent outcry that this would adversely impact seniors across the state. So we've gone through this exercise in the last 4 years, and this was one of the most consistent that legislators could agree on that we needed to retain and really help those who are struggling to make initial payments.
Brief follow-up?
And a brief follow-up, too. I just want to make it clear for the record that this benefit program is one of several. Most of the recipients here are likely to qualify for Medicaid and low income, and there are additional benefits. So I just want people to be assured this is not the only support we give to our valued seniors. Thanks.
Okay. Any other Representative Mina?
Thank you, Chair Prox. Through the chair, just out of curiosity, are there any other states that have state-funded senior benefit programs or an equivalent of what we have here?
There is no other states that do it exactly like we do it. There are about three other states that have very similar programs that when in my research that came across, but we are, our program is a little bit different than all of them, I believe.
That was?
Your name.
Sorry, Bob Ballinger, staff representative Vance.
Thank you.
Representative Sumner.
Through the chair, why 10-year extension, not 4 or 6 or 12?
Through the chair, Representative Sumner. I chose the round number of 10 to provide a surety for the seniors that this was not going to just suddenly be eliminated.
Follow up.
And then through the chair, I have not read the other body's bill, but is it the same extension in the companion bill?
Through the chair, Representative Sumner, there were two bills presented. One of them was an 8-year extension and one of them was a 10-year extension. And I have not kept up with which one, what the current language is in the Senate bill.
Thank you. All right. Any other questions? Does Director Etheridge. Did I get that right? I'm sorry. Yes. Did you? You're okay. We always like to hear from you. All right. Any closing comments?
Just thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to hear this bill.
All right. Thank you. And with that, we'll set this bill aside. I guess hold is the right word for further proceeding. And on to the next order of business, which is the initial hearing for House Bill 260, Catastrophic Illness and Medical Assistance. Representative Stapp and his staff. Say that three times fast. Honor Miller are here to explain why this bill is for us. And Deb Etheridge, Director of Division of Public Assistance, and Renee Gerhardt, Director, Division of Healthcare Services, are available for answering questions. Representative Stapp and Ms. Miller, if you would please come forward to the table, put yourself on the record, and tell us why you're bringing this bill to us.
Well, thank you, Chair Prox, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Representative Will Stapp. I represent East Fairbanks, Fort Wainwright, and Badger Road. Staff will now introduce herself and put herself on the record.
Through the chair, my name is Honor Miller Austin, staff to Representative Will Stapp.
And thank you, Chair Prox. With your prerogative and the permission of the committee, I'd like to just go ahead and give an introductory version of the bill and then have my staff explain the sectional analysis.
Okay. And would you like questions in the course of it, or just shall we wait until you're done with your presentation?
Oh, through the chair, to the members of to the Health Committee. It works either way for me, whatever the will of the committee is.
All right, very good. Please proceed.
Well, thank you, Chair Prox and members of the committee. For the record, again, my name is Representative Will Stapp. I'm here to present HB 260. Basically, I'm going to walk you through kind of how I arrived at a conclusion. First of all, let me say that I believe in results-based budgeting, and I think that the people of the state of Alaska expect us to operate as efficiently as we possibly can. And what HB 260 would do is a straight repeal of a program called Catastrophic and Acute Medical Assistance. The program has a long history in the state of Alaska. In a nutshell, In the Affordable Care Act passed at the federal level, and in 2014, the state of Alaska expanded Medicaid. And ever since that time, you've seen a cliff level of drop-off in utilization of this program, right, to the point we were at today, in which there are actually no Alaska residents who are currently receiving chronic and acute medical assistance. There were no Alaska residents who received the benefit in the previous year and the previous year before that. And prior to that, there were two individuals who qualified for chronic and acute medical assistance because they met very specific requirements. So when I took a look at, the issues in context of HB 260, the overarching issues are DPA eligibility technicians, application processing, and this kind of lead to the big elephant in the room, which is, of course, the backlogs that the department is currently facing, the most notable of which is the SNAP backlog. And, of course, there were other backlogs in the department earlier. So I decided that I would go tour DPA, talk to folks in management and different eligibility technicians to try to determine what, if anything, we as a legislature could do to ease their burden, to streamline their application process, and to provide better utility for those Alaskans who do need programs. Because I'm sure you and every other member of the committee would agree with me that, hey, it's really difficult to backlog food. So individuals who are currently suffering because the state cannot deliver on a program like a supplemental nutrition program, it creates a very challenging environment. So I fundamentally believe that anything that we can do to alleviate the burden on our frontline employees, looking at the cost drivers for the state, you're going to find that within the bill, we currently appropriate about $150,000-ish. My staff will certainly correct me on the absolute total of that, and grants and benefits lines. But that's really not the total cost of administering the program. So in your packet, you'll find conversations that I had with members of the department regarding how many applications for the program were put through the system last year, numbers 6,226. how long it takes to process each individual application. That average time is about 90 minutes. So you do a simple calculation of payroll man hours, and you find that a program that in our budgetary books has $150,000 appropriation, when you incorporate administrative costs, payroll time, man hours, that type of stuff, you're going to find that that number is well higher than that, approaching over $500,000. So that's pretty much CAMA HB260 in a nutshell, and I'll kind of cede the rest of the explanation to my my staff.
Please proceed.
Through the chair, again, my name is Honor Miller-Austin, Staff to Representative Will Stapp, and I'm just going to mention a couple things that I feel are pretty important for the bill. So the program began in 1986, and recipients were mainly those who too young for Medicare and with incomes too high to qualify for Medicaid. Those who were either not covered by health insurance or whose insurance was inadequate to brace the catastrophic illness event without endangering their financial resources. And then I will jump into the sectional analysis. Section one of this bill is a change to amend and delete the reference to catastrophic illness assistance from service providers. Section two deletes reference to catastrophic illness assistance from evidence in connection with investigation under the administration. Section 3 deletes catastrophic illness assistance from obtaining payment from providers. Section 4 deletes reference to catastrophic illness assistance from medical assistance fraud. Section 5 deletes reference to catastrophic illness assistance commissioner, excluding applicant from medical assistance program. Section 6 deletes catastrophic illness assistance from the definition of medical assistance program. Section 7 deletes catastrophic illness assistance from the definition of medical assistance provider. Section 8 deletes catastrophic illness assistance from the definition of medical assistance services. Section 9 modifies the reference to catastrophic illness assistance as former. Section 10A repeals all references to catastrophic illness assistance within statute. Section 10B repeals reference to medical assistance for chronic or acute medical conditions within statute. And then Section 11 is an uncodified law adding a new section that allows the Department of Health to create an initial case if fraud is found within previous program of assistance for catastrophic illness and chronic or acute medical conditions, as well as Section 12 being uncodified law that adds a new section allowing the Department of Health to issue subpoenas and further investigate with necessary records or evidence.
Do we have any questions from the committee? Representative Fields.
Thank you, through the chair. I guess my only question is, in addition to outright elimination, have you considered changing the program to be, say, referral only in the event that the federal government radically changes health coverage and suddenly Alaskans who have now gotten covered because of Medicaid no longer would be able to be covered, just to give one example. Thank you.
Through the chair to Representative Fields. So it's an interesting hypothetical. I don't really think that you're going to see a major change in kind of the Medicaid expansion. I think too many states have adopted that. I will say that for individuals, so kind of the way it works, and we can bring the department up here for some of the technical details, if you will. So right now, the department is doing Medicaid redeterminations. So when an individual is determined that they're not eligible for Medicaid anymore, my understanding, I can probably say this pretty high confidence, that the department already refers those individuals to the healthcare market. That's kind of standard in procedure. And I can either look back in the room and you could nod yes, or I can call you up to the table. Yep, there you go. So she agrees. So that type of procedural stuff is kind of already built into the cake, if that makes sense.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair Prox. Through the chair, I have a question related to our field's question about that referral to the marketplace. And I was discussing this with some of your staff about how there were two individuals that did receive CAMA. And the window of folks who might receive it are people who are waiting for that five-year eligibility for people who are legal immigrants. And so my curiosity is, why weren't those two individuals who received CAMA referred to the marketplace if they might have been eligible in that regard?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Zumia, that's a good question. I can tell you that I'm sure it's in the packet already, but you'll find that the requirements for legal residents, right, who have not made a five-year residency in the country. They are eligible for healthcare.gov. They're eligible for the subsidy if they meet all the requirements, and you can look at all the definitions. But as far as if they were referred or not, I don't know. I would assume that they probably were, but I would have to kind of ask the department to if they know if those two individuals from 5 years ago were initially or not. So,
well, we don't want to lose an excuse to for yes. Okay.
For the record, my name is Deb Etheridge. I'm the director for the Division of Public Assistance, and through the chair to Representative Mina. It is the practice, as stated, to refer individuals to the federally facilitated marketplace. There may have been a gap in that time where they met the CAMA eligibility, and so for a short period of time before obtaining other health insurance, they may have received the benefit, and we can look into it further.
Thank you. May I ask a follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair Prox. Through the chair, while you're here, I have another question just related to some of the different definitions. For what is the definition of a catastrophic illness? Does it pertain to a chronic condition, or is it also somebody who has been in an emergency situation?
Through the chair, this is Deb Etheridge, Director of Division Public Assistance, through the chair to Representative Mina. There are specific categories for eligibility for CAMA. It is, and I'll list them, it's cancer patient requiring chemotherapy, terminally ill, and I have a definition I can provide to the group. It's on the other side of my application. Chronic diabetes or diabetes insipidus, chronic seizure disorder, chronic mental illness, and chronic hypertension. Those are the only categories of eligibility.
Yeah. Through the chair, could I add to that?
Representative Sapp.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Proxy, the chair, Representative Mina. So, yeah, again, if you look at the coverages provided under the marketplace, we call this minimum essential coverage, you will actually find the policies on the federal facility marketplace that people can enroll in actually cover far more issues, because in the insurance world, right, what I would consider chronic and acute, I have a huge variety of conditions that would grossly exceed what the state statute is. So, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair Prox, through the chair. Thank you for that response. And I believe Rep. Stapp and I both share the love for a strong risk pool. And so I hope that this legislation might also help people sign up for the marketplace. My one other question is just related to sections 11 and 12 going on page 5, 6 through 24. I just would love a little bit more clarity of what these sections do.
Through the chair to Representative Mina, now that my staff has returned to the table, you mind asking the question again?
Yes. Through the chair.
Representative Mina, yes.
Thank you, Chair Prox. I'm on page 5. I'm looking at sections 11, 12, lines 6 through 24.
Through the chair to Representative Mina, so those sections are allowing the Department of Health to still be able to investigate cases within the catastrophic and medical illness application program after it's been removed from statute. So the cases that have already been applied and they're going to look through, if there is a fraud case, they're allowed to look into it and prosecute and investigate if something were to happen.
Follow-up?
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair Prox, through the chair. And so we're repealing this program within the budget, and in terms of the department having the authority to investigate, is that people who have already applied, and where would there be an instance of fraud if we're repealing the program and people aren't signing up for it?
Yeah. for the record, this Representative Stapp, through the chair to Representative Mita. Actually, it's a really good point you brought up. We discussed this. How could you have any fraud if no one's on the program? That's kind of the simple speak, right? I mean, and the honest answer was, this is kind of a standard and customary practice through LBNA for how they look at programs if they want to continue to have auditing authority. I do not think anyone is ever going to audit a program that no one is on, right? That would be a little waste of funds. But the provision is in the bill to kind of continue with the standard and customary practices that LBNA uses. So that's why it's there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions? Any other closing comments?
through the chair to the members of the committee and the wonderful folks from the health department. I just want to thank everyone for being here, and I hope that you'll support us as we look to kind of modernize and efficient process the Department of Public Assistance to ensure that in the future, every Alaskan, when they come to the department for need, can get their need in the most efficient and time efficient process possible. Thank you.
Okay. And to the department, have we missed anything? We're good? Okay. So we will hold on to this bill for further processing. And are there any final questions or comments from the committee? Hearing none, we're going to meet next week. No, we're going to meet, yes, next Tuesday at 3 p.m. and Davis 106. And with that, we are adjourned at 3:29.